For April the 12th, 2019, we talk about Baba Is You, the difficulty as accessibility issue, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 281. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, Ben, welcome back.
Hey, I know. Yeah. It's been a month.
Yeah, that's the longest you've been away, I think.
I know. I've been going through withdrawal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had that phone call, but that was about it. It's good hearing from you again.
Yeah. No, I'm super happy to be recording again.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe we have a system in place so I'll be coming back on the rig. So.
Think so, yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about that afterward.
Okay.
in between stuff. That's a bunch of boring logistics. But how are things up in sunny Seattle?
It was kind of sunny. Like people joked about there saying that I should have came earlier because it started being a little bit more sunnier when I came.
Uh-huh.
But it's gotten back to the normal routine of being rainy and stuff now this week. So it's, I've gotten used to just walking in spitting rain and just accepting that. So that's a weird feeling.
So what he's really telling me is that he's moved into the cistern.
Wait, what?
You just moved into the cistern that we usually throw people in when they disappear for a week or two.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I thought Dennis was hiding in there. I didn't know if there was room for two people. But...
Well, apparently you must have neighboring cisterns because, it sounds like you just like settled in like it's your Pokeball or something.
Mm-hmm.
The Oubliette duet.
Yeah.
I spent like 3 days looking for apartments when I first got here, which was like a terrible experience because housing is like not... It's expensive out here or whatever. And I didn't, I was very sad about all that, but I finally found a spot that had like a decent amount of square feet in it. And then I forgot that I don't have any stuff. So I just have kind of an empty living room with boxes. So I eventually will need to furnish that if I want to entertain people.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One step at a time. You moved, most of the way across the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, it's good to have you back. Any cool Seattle stories aside from just getting acclimated?
I've enjoyed the coffee and I have not enjoyed the rain. So I've had a pretty typical Seattle experience.
I think so. don't carry an umbrella. My understanding is if you take out an umbrella, like a bunch of kids on mini bikes, just kind of like just roll you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what the tourists do or the new people do. I'm not like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, being comfortable is for wimps. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, we're kind of in all the corners here. So Ben is holding down the Northwest. David, how are things in the Northeast?
Getting warmer, which is always good.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, not really.
Okie doke. Now moving down to South Central, Jala, how are things how are things cool. looking on that perimeter?
Well, we actually had a storm here the other day, so like I didn't get to stream this weekend because a giant storm rolled through and knocked off my internet and then also the power for a little bit.
It's been a bad time for your internet and power.
Yeah, it really has been, and I think that's what's screwing up my PC. So, I have it on a battery backup, but then the battery backup has failed when I've been like asleep, and then it's just like, oops. Okay, so.
I'm surprised you're not able to hear that from inside your house. Whenever my APC turns off, it's like, yeah, no, we're going to just alert the authorities, I suppose.
Yeah, like it screams. It screams. But yeah, like actually the good thing about my building is I can blare music as loud as I want to and not bother anybody because nobody can hear it. So. Yeah.
Cool. No, things here in this rough center. I don't know, the Great Lakes region. Yeah, no, things have been good. It's been I feel like most of us talked about the weather, but for me, it's apropos. It's been nice enough for me to like go out on some trail walks, which is nice. So, plenty of those. Got to go swing by some vernal ponds. Are you aware of vernal ponds?
I don't know what a vernal pond is.
Yeah, no. So I only know this because of a sign. But you know, most of the, you know, still early spring ish. Not a lot of leaves out. But I want to go back to these places to see them. You know, at different parts of the year to watch how the forest, you know, grows and then dies and stuff like that. But apparently, one of these, it's like the most, let's say, productive spawning area for amphibians in Ohio. Something like that. So a vernal pond is like a temporary wetland in the woods that pops up just because of all the, you know, snow melting and stuff like that. But it has no fish in it because it's just, you know, a temporary pond that's only there in the spring and early summer. And all the frogs and salamanders, they decide, fuck yeah, this is the place. This is the time. And they just go into each other and you go by and I don't have like a decibel meter, but like it is incredibly loud with all of these frogs and salamanders. You just loving life.
Well, you know, the thing about it that makes me laugh is that for a minute there, one of the various times you said the word salamander, I swear you said salad-mander. And then like my brain went elsewhere and you lost me for the rest of it. And so we got back to the loving life thing. And I'm like, what?
Sorry. I'm sorry, salad.
Is that called vegan sniping?
Maybe. No, but yeah, it's been nice to get out into the woods and walk by some creeks and stuff like that. So
Colt, would you ever take Greta on a walk with you?
I think that she would be, it's hard to pin her down. Cause I had some contractors here the other day, to do a job that they said they could do. But then when they looked inside my walls, you're like, yeah, we can't do this, but JK later, bye. I didn't have to pay him. So it was fine. But no, like they were here and she, you know, she bolted like the second they came in, but she has an automatic feeder. And I was like, okay, how's this going to work? Cause she's back hiding in a closet or something. The automatic feeder goes out and I watch and like, she is scared of the strangers, but she is not so scared that she will delay a meal.
So she has her priorities in life.
Yeah. So like she slunk out like right past those guys who were, you know, checking my walls and stuff. And like she would take a couple of bites and then she would look up at me. Her eyes were like as big as saucers. Yeah. They were just all pupil because she was just real anxious. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to help you with this. I wish I could help you be less scared, but I don't know. It's not like I can like have contractors come over every day. Yeah. She doesn't get it. She doesn't get that way around family, but.
Huh. You just have to, you know, act like you're guarding her, right?
Maybe, yeah. That's right. And that's why I stood by her, because I was just curious to see how this would go. Yeah. No, so she, in some ways, she is very brave. She is not really afraid of any place of the house, but she also doesn't go outside. Like, I can go in and out the front door, and she does not. She'll just kind of stay there by the threshold looking out. So I think if I slapped a harness on her and took her outside, she would be climbing up my leg. Yeah. She's a good cat though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's my story. So now that we have you back, Ben, I think that we have the permission to do the regular kind of show.
Are you guys still doing random order? Or
we're doing the brief, the multiplayer and grind. And by popular demand, we are doing
The brief
first, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm having trouble deciding which of these should go first, because I just watched this sketch earlier today. David, what is going on with The Division and SNL?
Yeah, so SNL made a actually kind of bizarre parodying the Division 2 and how aggressively talkative the NPCs tend to be. So basically a guy is, you know, trying to play a demo of the game and just wants to get to the combat but is completely unable to because he's repeatedly accosted by NPCs wanting to tell him their life stories.
it's like two NPCs who run the battle hub, but they don't get along, so all they do is like talk shit about each other. Dude.
Exactly. And what I found kind of funny about is, in other news, the Ubisoft has announced its most recent patch that the NPCs in the game will not bother you so much.
So, I mean, can you articulate how accurate this is? Because obviously this is played for laughs. It's, you know, Kit Harington, you know, talking shit about a coworker. But, like, you know, you just want to get the guns and they're, like, giving you a life story. Like, how literal is that?
So it being actual exposition and stuff like that is not accurate. What it more tends to be is just, you know, the NPCs are programmed to very enthusiastically greet you and, like, you know, talk about, you know, what a badass you are and, you know, how much good you're doing in the world and, you know, stuff like that. And in particular, they're not really set up to stop doing that. Both if you're, you know, in a menu or, you know, going through your inventory, something like that. And also, most notably, if you stand next to them, they won't just, like, greet you once. They'll greet you, you know, I don't know, every couple of seconds.
Don't just stand there.
Every time you make eye contact. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Don't just stand there. They feel awkward and they've got to fill that space. Honestly, overall, I noticed this aspect less that I noticed. I play with the more extreme closed captioning.
Okay.
Where, like, even incidental dialogue is captioned.
Nice.
And pretty much anywhere I am in the game, it seems, I can hear the warnings for civilians not to, like, enter dangerous zones.
So just which always is there.
Right, which is weird because I don't think I've ever actually heard that dialogue.
But it's always there on your screen.
Right, exactly. Although I do have to say, one kind of highlight, just weird, ever-present dialogue is all of the factions have various propaganda recorded for them that they'll play. And all of the hideouts have their own radio station that a lot of them, you know, tend to be very, very entertaining. And, you know, just, you know, it being the post-apocalypse, you know, half the radio messages are, yeah, this is some band I don't remember, but it's pretty good.
Nice. Well, it's good that they're listening to people. Too much dialogue is not a good thing.
So now we need to get SNL to make fun of loot boxes? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I think that'd be good. If that is what we need to affect change, then go for it. Yeah.
Make fun of the change you want to see in the world.
Jolly, your topic is a little bit bigger. So Ben and I are going to split screen this a thing happened story, but
do
it's
it.
Real cool. Ben, what's going on with Little Big Planet?
Yeah, this is a very meta story. So somebody in Little Big Planet 3 made Mario Maker in a recognition of Mario Maker 2 coming out. So we got all the numbers there.
Now when he says that, you may be thinking, you may hear, oh, somebody made a Mario level in Little Big Planet. No, somebody made Mario Maker.
Yeah. This is the Mario Maker Maker.
No, it's like if you make a man a Mario level, he'll play for a day. If you make him a Mario Maker, he'll play for the rest of his life.
Well, if you give a man a Mario Maker, you will make a level if you I don't know, this breaks down, it's too recursive.
They released a video of one of the persons, like, making a level and then playing it in it again. So it's, they're functionally playing Mario Maker, but it's made in the Little Big Planet, so the kind of carryover is the physics is the same as in Little Big Planet.
Boo.
Yeah, so that looks like a little, like, kind of slidey and a little bit weird, which kind of, I never really thought about it, but it's kind of like the secret sauce of games is, like, the physics and, like, how they do some of the things like that.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. No, yeah. The jump arc in Little Big Planet is not the Mario jump arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other noticeable differences are, like, kind of like the animations of coins when you pick them up, or, like, the sound effects when you hit boxes are all, like, different and not as good. But it's still, like, a cool proof of concept that somebody could do this, and that somebody could do this somewhat quickly, because I think this person started on this in March, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was announced March 10th. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, just asking if we could, and not bothering if they should. Let's just do it. We can. I'm curious because the video doesn't show the workings of this. Like, I'm just really curious about the logic. I want a walkthrough of the way this works, not so much a walkthrough of the end result, because the end result is, like, the least interesting part of this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is a story that Dennis would probably really enjoy, and he's the one person not here right now.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. He'd say, oh, you'd be able to do that a lot easier in dreams. I don't know. No, this is top of mind because we're doing that live watch out for Fireballs. I'm talking like G-Man. We're doing that live WAF about creative games. And so Mario Maker is something I've been fucking around with recently. And this really stuck out to me.
Mm.
Yeah. And Mario Maker 2 is going to be great.
Yeah, it's coming out in like June or July, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Be on the Switch.
Whee!
Yeah. And finally, Jala. So yeah, I don't know if you know how much of a hornet's nest you're thwacking.
Oh, I know it's a big deal, but right, I'm still gonna bring it up, and we gonna talk about it a little bit anyway.
Okay. Well, so what hornet's nest are you whacking?
I will present what the article says, and then we can have a brief, hopefully brief discussion about it. Now that Sekiro is out in the world, I came across an article, one of many, about game difficulty being an accessibility issue. And I wanted to bring it here to talk about it. So there was a Forbes article that proposed that Sekiro needs an easy mode in order to allow it to be more accessible to a broader number of players. The gist is that difficulty is a relative term, and that there's an accessibility specialist named Ian Hamilton who works with devs about accessibility issues and contributed to the game accessibility guidelines document, which I didn't even know it existed, but it apparently is a thing to help devs understand, you know, how to make their games more accessible. Anyway, this guy said, difficulty is what you experience as a result of the balance between your own abilities and the barriers that the game presents. Accessibility is about avoiding situations that may arise due to disability or other factors that result in unnecessarily excessive difficulty for players. Now, Greg and I were having a kind of delayed timing discussion via voice messages last week about this exact subject.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that he just doesn't have the hand-eye coordination nor the time to get good to play things like, you know, a FromSoft game, like a modern FromSoft game, although he would love to be able to. Of course, plenty of folks in the community would say, not our community, just like the community that plays this game, would say that if he wanted to, he'd invest the time and so on. And if he can't, then he just isn't going to play it. And they're right, he won't. He'll watch a streamer or a Let's Play or something, kind of like how he does with Hexcrank, because he doesn't like playing horror games.
Right.
So initially, my thought about, you know, this whole issue was I'll save my thought till later. But the article talks about options in general, that all options are accessibility options, that there isn't an accessibility option. They're all options are to make the game accessible. Mm-hmm. And that difficulty mode is something that requires players to make an important decision without full knowledge of what they're getting into. So the devs need to be clear about what the options do. Someone having slow reaction speeds doesn't mean that they also automatically have difficulty outsmarting AI or managing ammo. Yet that's often the kind of thing that broad difficulty settings assume. And so there's some screenshots in the article which are really interesting of some good examples of difficulty settings that I think would be amazing if they were copied and made adjustable from the menu as you played the game, so you can bump it up or lower it down depending upon where you're at and how you're performing. You know, the games that they cited were things like Way of the Passive Fist and FIFA 19. Way of the Passive Fist, for example, there's slider bars for enemy strength and counters, combo mastery, and resourcefulness. And for FIFA, it's CPU, sprint speed, and acceleration, shot and pass error, and shot and pass speed. Other proposals about, you know, what they could do, like devs in general could do to address this kind of an issue, would be tweaks that are considered adjacent to difficulty by players without disabilities, like the sparring area in Sekiro, for example, where players can, you know, fight and practice and, you know, learn how to play the game without having the repercussions, you know, in the actual game itself. The article says that Sekiro is actually the most accessible of the most recent FromSoft games because it lets you run away from boss encounters and pause the game to reassign items during combat, which is not something that was in the other games.
Right.
More recent titles, such as Dark Souls. So one of the things in the article was a quote that says, accessibility isn't there to conflict with the dev's creative vision. It's there to support it by avoiding unnecessary barriers between the players and the experience you want them to have.
I feel like what if the difficulty is part of the experience
you want them to have? I know, and that's kind of one of the things about From's MO, is that that's kind of their MO. Like, their steez in general from the last several years is all about that. And so, like, my initial thought was that no, there shouldn't be an easy mode in Sekiro, because the whole premise of a FromSoft game in modern times, like, they're known for being difficult. You know, that's like what makes people want to play them oftentimes in the first place. So, but when I was thinking that, though, I was thinking about people like Greg who could work up to eventually go through the game if he wanted to, burn the next half year or whatever of his life trying to practice to get to the point that he could, you know. But I wasn't thinking about those who have difficult, you know, different physical challenges that make it too difficult and literally cannot play the game. Now, the thing is that I do think that it's excessive to have a high barrier to entry, but to play devil's advocate, games can be made for niche markets, you know, like that Vizinov where you date girls that are actually tanks. Like, that's a decision on the part of the producer and the developer to make something that's for a niche market, these people who like these really, really difficult games or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, our current culture is about making everything accessible to everyone, though, so it's not the current trend to make something that isn't for everyone. And in the case of the tank game, anyone can play it. It is accessible to play, even if the content doesn't strike a chord with the player. But when I was little, NES games were so difficult, and it wasn't even talked about, you know, back then about the difficulty, it needs to be more accessible. Nobody cared. Like, they just let the kids play the game forever and ever until they honed their skills to get good at the game to be able to beat the game, you know, and it was not a big deal. However, society and the gaming development, you know, stuff has come a long way since Mario, you know, the first Mario. So, you know, that's why it's like, I don't know, I'm kind of like, you know, I can see both sides of the argument here, so I just wanted to throw it out there and see what you guys thought.
Yeah,
good.
Oh, I was gonna say, I think it's something that probably shouldn't be in, like, force, because, like, the case that I'm thinking of is, like, maybe if there's, like, a small team of, like, one or two people and, like, you know, they have, like, next to no money and they need to release a game and they just don't have time to add certain features, then, like, it shouldn't be forced upon them. But it should definitely be, like, I guess, applauded when, like, a game company does, like, make something that's, like, completely inclusive. Like, shout out to, like, Naughty Dog, for example, for, like, having a very inclusive thing. Shout out to, like, Nintendo for having like casual modes or like chill modes on like a lot of their games that are coming out now. I think Yoshi's, the most recent Yoshi game that came out, there's like a chill mode where you just like press a button and he just floats through the level and you don't have to do anything. And it's like, and so it's, I mean, that's great if you just want to experience the game without like, if you know, there's something that's prohibiting you from playing the game. So I think that's kind of where I fall on it.
We talk about this a lot. The first Sekiro episode of Bonfireside Chat just came out, so I don't want to repeat too much of that, because if you want that, you got to pay. No, I don't want to repeat too much of that, just because that was a discussion, and I especially don't want to represent anything Gary says, you know, out of school.
This is
difficult to separate from toxic discourse. You know, in terms of, you know, I have not heard an especially compelling argument for why modular difficulty mitigation options takes away anything from somebody who wants to play the game, quote, as the developer intended, you know, in the normal mode as things are. I don't see an argument for why that makes anybody, why somebody else's experience being better makes anybody else's experience worse. I don't see an argument for that is not rooted in weird gamer identity shit that is terrible.
Yeah.
For me, one of the frustrating things is that there seems to be, you know, this always happens around the release of a FromSoft game, and there seems to be just like amnesia that pops up about like, remember when we had this conversation before, and you there was also the argument that like, you know, it needs to be, you know, an accomplishment to meet this game on its terms and all of that. Like, so now that a game is harder because FromSoft is making their games harder, and people who like these games will understand that, is what came before just like not hard anymore? You know, is this only a one-way ratchet? Is FromSoft going to be the person who defines what difficulty is and should be? And, you know, will those define what accomplishment means? You know, things like that. And the frustrating thing, again, about the amnesia is that there have been difficulty mitigation things before, whether it's, you know, grinding for levels, whether it's getting better loot, you know, just, and those things have kind of been taken away. Also, as the bosses add more phases and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, first off, that what somebody is asking for with this from an accessibility standpoint, to say, oh, what you want is an easy mode. No, like they've never had an easy mode, but they've had creative ways to make certain things easier so you can get off, so you can get over these hills, because the walls are not universal. Dark Souls finds your weakness. Well, you know, what is a wall for you is not going to be a wall for somebody else.
Yeah.
It's been in the past, they've been able to flex so you can get over this. So like when somebody who is familiar with the Soul series is talking about Sekiro and saying, yeah, like they, like there needs to be some kind of flexibility to this. You know, I haven't seen one person outside of a headline kind of summarizing or catching eyes actually say, hey, this needs an easy mode. What I have heard is people actually asking for a creative solution to this problem that FromSoft is kind of like painted themselves into, you know, a way out of this corner that FromSoft has painted themselves into by doubling down and kind of becoming a parody of themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So it just, I do not read, you know, bullshit difficulty as being, you know, your artistic vision. And especially if you're saying, oh, it is their vision for it to be bullshit difficulty, there's nothing they can do, you're saying this company is not creative enough to make it to make a better game defined by, you know, it creates more joy for people, you know?
Yeah.
That argument had a lot of assumptions baked into it. I didn't mean to go as in depth into that as I did, but this is a conversation that animates me. And I really think that boiling it down to, should it have an easy mode or not, just overlooks the nuance that is actually brought in, you know. And when you look at this article on junkie.com, you know, all these developers are kind of not just making suggestions or armchair quarterbacking, but talking about things that they have done in their own games to make it make it more accessible, to make it so that, you know, when this game finds your weakness, you can experience more of it while still having the feeling, while still having, you know, engaging with the systems as they stand.
Yeah, and that's really why this particular article is long. It's a very long article if you go look it up. But like, it is a good article because it does go into that detail and it does offer solutions that are not put an easy mode in it, you know, like easy button, you know, like it's not that kind of a thing. They're talking about, you know, parsing out even, you know, different ways of parsing it out and different ways of adding, you know, options again, like just options in general to make it, you know, something that can reach a larger audience and can still be difficult for them, but on their own terms rather than, you know, this bar that's defined by From the way that you say.
So I think where I'd tend to come down on this is, you know, I think there can be games where the difficulty of the game is part of the point, is part of the experience, the artistic whatever. And so I think taking away that difficulty would, you know, undermine the game. So I think I would be opposed to, you know, something that was, you know, just explicitly, you know, making something like Dark Souls or whatever easier. However,
what does the option take away from you?
Say that again.
What does the option take away from you?
I think it does. You know, I think if the difficulty is completely optional, then it's then it's not really there to begin with.
But all you have to do is not change that option.
Well, but I mean, you could also try to play the game blindfolded. I mean, I think there's a degree to which, you know, the difficulty has to actually be there for it to mean something. However, I do agree with what you're saying, and that, you know, I think it's, you know, makes sense to have ways for people to, you know, adjust the, you know, experience and have, like you said, flexibility. And I think especially, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, kind of modular difficulty controls that deal with things that are either just, you know, largely BS, you know, just the things that are not actually challenging but just quote unquote hardcore. And then also, you know, I think it's valid to differentiate between difficulty that I guess is actually challenging versus, you know, just something, you know, that say requires, you know, top, you know, 10%, you know, reaction speed or whatever.
Oh, that's all the stuff we're talking about.
I don't think it necessarily is. I mean, I think that's not been my experience with any of the Soulsborne games, is that they require just a, you know, superhuman level of reaction speed. You know, definitely it helps, but in my experience, you know, pretty much any of it, you can, you know, through a combination of, you know, improving your skills and learning the game, you can, and, you know, if you need to, just power grinding, you can, you know, figure out a way past it.
But who decides what's good difficulty and what's bullshit difficulty, and why is it that the people who are saying, oh, these are too difficult, we need a way around it, why is their judgment on that not accurate, or as accurate as anybody else's interpretation?
I'm not saying it is.
But also, a main thing to think about too is that you can make a game difficult, and yes, you have FromSoft games, but then you've got things like mods and walkthroughs and things like that that are out there to make it more accessible, and those are created by people who are working against those difficulty levels when there's a high barrier to entry anyway. So, like, why does it matter if it's in the game or out there in the universe somewhere? It doesn't matter.
Because console.
Where you're getting it. I mean,
yeah.
So I tend to think those generally affect different parts of the difficulty.
I also think that there might be two different scopes here. Like, David, do you think, like, all games should have, like, a static difficulty? Or...
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, one of the reasons I haven't purchased Shakira is that I'm not interested in a From game where I can't power level. So, like, I'm not even saying that in this case, I don't think they're wrong about their difficulty. I'm simply saying that I don't agree that across the board things should always be made to a certain degree of easiness. I'm just saying I think there can be a point where making a game any easier would detract from the game.
Yeah.
I think the important part is that developers are just conscientious of what they're doing. And so if they one example I'm thinking of is in the game, The Witness, there's two types of puzzles, like one that rely on having not be colorblind mm-hmm. and one that relies on like audio puzzles. So having like, good hearing. And like John Blow, like talked at one point in one of the videos about like, trying to consider other options or like how they could kind of get around that sort of thing. And like they were at least, exploring how they could have puzzles and still like have colorblind people be able to solve them and that type mm-hmm. of thing. So they were at least conscientious in their design. Like, cause I think I think we kind of have the similar opinions where I think overall, like as long as people are conscientious and you can change difficulties for things, that's good. There might be a edge type game where, people are conscientious of that. It's not accessible, but they still want to make a hard game because that's like their enjoyment or that's their like niche market, like what you were saying, Jala. And I think that can be okay as long as they know what they're doing and they, say why they want it that way, I guess. But
right. Yeah. And I think for most games, one, I definitely agree with the argument that I think a big flaw in a lot of games is making the difficulty be just an arbitrary setting rather than, specific to the thing. I know, actually in both Shadow of War and Fallout 4, I would have actually liked to have more of the difficulty, but there were certain features that were innately tied to the higher difficulty, like disabling fast travel.
Yeah. Well, we just talked about this with RE2. Like, I would love to have the save system of hardcore mode where you have to find the ink ribbons, but not the crazy resilience of the zombies that comes along with that or the resource scarcity.
Yeah, exactly. So I think definitely, the games I really think do a good job of this are things like Darkest Dungeon, where you can I think from what I remember dramatically change up like how it handles costs of things and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of shit that I want. And that's what I'm arguing for. One little like rhetorical thing that I've even noticed us doing, but I've also seen it referred to, like talking about, oh, they should be allowed, or like, oh, nobody should stop them, or nobody should enforce. I want to not cede that because I don't think anybody is arguing, even people who are on the extreme side of there should be difficulty options. I don't think anybody is saying there should be a governmental agency that goes and forces them to. What we're talking about is, should From be exempt from criticism about the decisions they make,
And I think that's almost maybe the bigger thing is, I feel like it's super important to look at Or I feel like it's almost even more valuable to look at, you know, whether or not a given instance of difficulty is just kind of bullshit or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think this isn't directly, you know, related, but, you know, something I think very strongly is that I would like to see more game reviews, particularly ones that discuss difficulty, discuss the degree to which a game actually teaches you.
Yeah.
That thing. You know, I think a good example for the say like Dark Souls is I think Dark Souls does a very good job of teaching you the you know, shield mechanics and a decent job of teaching you the dodge mechanics, but a piss poor job of teaching you the parry mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, you know, generally speaking, you have to have the former two to get through the game. You don't have to have the ability to parry.
Yeah, up until the last boss.
To be fair, I think on every Soulsborne game I've gotten, I have beaten all except for the last boss, and that's been where I've gotten bored.
The last bosses generally are not very good. So what was that, Jala, about us not spending too much time on this?
I know. Let's move on.
It's a tough topic. Yeah. It really is. You know,
it is.
I just wish it didn't come up around FromSoft stuff because there is a toxic element to that community. As much as I wish it wasn't so, and I would like the discussion to be cleaner because I feel like there would be more to be gained about understanding what difficulty actually means if it was not tied up in that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of I feel that you know, people who not in jest use the phrase get good, that, you know, that should be an instance where assault is legal.
you should at least get like a chance to, you know, spend 5 minutes alone with their car with a 9-iron. Like,
yeah.
What were you going to say, Ben?
I was going to say, at least games are moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are anymore. But
yeah, these games.
Overall, it's kind of funny, instances where every so often you'll see something that just didn't, did not work. I have a friend who's, completely colorblind, and she, started a, like, some German language software.
Oh, yeah?
And it immediately starts with, like, let's learn the letters, or the colors. What color is this? It's like, oops.
I mean, it's just a cruel German joke.
They're actually trying to teach you German culture.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and then you answer it. However, this week we are doing last week's free play. So this is where we take it and we turn it. Then you ask us a question and then we answer it. So I will get us started here with Roop, who says, is there a subject, concept, etc. that you feel can't or should not be turned into a video game format? Ooh, I have one.
What do you got?
Somebody in the Abject Suffering channel linked to what is apparently a series of games for the PC from the 90s that was about running German concentration camps. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't. A concentration camp can figure. Like, you know, like a Wolfenstein game is fine. And, you know, I think that I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, but maybe don't make it the one where you're running it.
I have a hard time thinking of a scenario where that's Yeah, like even a super super fantasy, you know, scenario where it's like, oh, you run the rock, you know, set up the concentration camp, and then that makes a, I don't know, Wolfenstein level that you can go kill the night. Like I can't even think of a completely nonsense reason where that would be a good idea.
No, I was taken aback. I was like, I had no idea such a thing existed. I don't know that I should have been surprised by it, but yeah, it was a bummer. So don't do that. I didn't mean to immediately Godwin's Law this question, but anybody else have one?
Like, not one to, that tops that, but.
Right? I mean, okay, I got nothing.
Okay.
I think one for me would be, you know, I'm a big proponent of, I guess I'd say, like, the idea of reverence, by which I mean, like, even if you don't agree with a important thing, understanding the proper value of it.
Right.
And I think a game that, you know, didn't do that, whether it was a belief I cared about or not, would very much not sit right with me.
That's your problem with, like, Rockstar games, right?
Yeah.
That's fine.
I added like five more syllables to that sentence than I needed to, but yes.
Yes.
Just like a Rockstar game.
Okay, I'll move us on from there. Greg says, recently the media has been publishing stories on online gaming addiction in Asian countries, such as South Korea, where people play all day without breaks and a number have died. Where do you think responsibility for this should fall on? The parents for not controlling their kids, the cafes for allowing it to happen, or the government for not taking action in trying to help this, quote, lost generation, or all of the above? That's a tricky question.
I got good and bad examples, both from Wizards of the Coast with Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
Their Friday Night Magic like thing, they kind of limit the number of times you can play Magic a week for game stores. I think like any game store that has Magic or whatever, there's only a certain number of times they can do it a week, just to like limit the amount of times that people can play. I think that's a step in the right direction. Step in the bad direction is if you play online for Magic, you can play anytime you want and you can, they're not going to stop you. They don't have any restrictions placed in. You can put as much money as you want in. Has kind of like all the kind of skeezy parts of a lot of modern game design.
My inclination is if this is happening at a business, it should be their responsibility probably. You know, because they are ostensibly profiting off of this person's behavior, you know, and in a lot of more regulated industries, you know, there are laws where the person who served somebody a alcoholic drink before they went and crashed into somebody, you know, in some jurisdictions is held liable. You know, I think that possibly that like that is who I am inclined. If you had the ability to cut off the service and you didn't, that to me feels most of all. I think that blaming the parents, who am I to tell a parent how to raise their kid? Also, like a lot of these are, you know, like it's not kids generally who are doing this based on the stories that I've read. And the government getting involved is really tricky, you know, when it could just be, you know, the liability falls to the proprietor.
Yeah. So I think a couple of things. I think there can potentially be a difference between, I guess, like fault and responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think probably at some point, you know, every individual is responsible for themselves, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're at fault or something. Like, or maybe vice versa, but like, I think there can be those sorts of dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, like, I think clearly, like, we know that, you know, addiction and stuff like that is a thing, and like, it's not as, you know, simple as like, oh yeah, they chose to do it. I'd say, I think some of it's, you know, look at, you know, who's being predatory in this situation. And I'm not saying any given person is. I'm just saying I think that's a good metric.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that's actually a good point here is with the government, you know, maybe not so much that the government needs to get involved to regulate games, but, you know, maybe the government needs to be looking at, like, why are games the only meaningful thing these people have in their lives?
Yeah,
it's a societal, you're talking about like it being a larger societal issue, you know, societal issue more so. Although, you know, that being said, like when I say culture, I don't mean like it's the South Korean culture. I mean like the dynamics of what's going on in these people's lives and how they're trained to think and feel about everything. I mean, like that plays a major part in, you know, what pressures them and what gives them release and how they end up in these situations. I mean, like, you know, different cultures also seem to kind of get addicted to sometimes similar and sometimes, you know, very disparate things, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, like right now on the news, it's all the opioid epidemic and stuff like that, you know, that kind of a thing here in America, but, you know.
Yeah.
So,
the opioid epidemic has taught me what feels like a useful term, which is deaths of despair, right?
Yeah.
You know, you know, deaths of, you know, alienation, right? And that I think is a broader topic. I don't know, maybe than even government should have. Like it is a something that is extremely concerning.
Yeah, I think this is maybe me a little bit soapboxing, but like I think one of the things I feel like a lot of like pundits miss about some of this stuff is I feel like one of the big problems in society is kind of the powers that be not actually taking happiness seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with that, I feel like a lot of the people I hear talk about that, those sorts of things, don't understand like true despair or depression. It's like, you know, I'll hear a lot of, you know, in the US, it tends to be more the conservative side of things. I don't know that it's necessarily innately that, but that's how it tends to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of talking about like, oh, well, you know, things aren't going to be, you know, you're not going to be super thrilled and happy-go-lucky all the time. It's like, no, these people are talking about, like, questioning whether they physically have the capability of experiencing happiness.
Yeah.
Like,
it's an illness.
You know, actual despair is something different.
Yeah. Wow, we got ourselves a real upbeat episode today, huh?
Yeah!
Yeah. was there anything else about that, or should I move us on?
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think it led to that, which is, you know, I think going back into depression and addiction are real actual things. And in a way it's complicated, but in a way it's really simple. It just involves basic compassion and believing somebody when they tell you something about themselves.
Totally.
Yeah. Darus says, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Darus, this one is for Jala. Which one is your favorite Shining Force character, both playable and NPCs? I'll love to hear you talking about why this is a game you like so much. And then I think the kitty smiley face. I think that's what that is. Yes,
that is a kitty smiley face.
Yeah.
Okay, so like that is a bigger question than I have time on this podcast to do, especially since we're already running kind of long. I will say that in the like my two favorite Shining Force games, you know, like first Shining Force and then the Shining Force 3. And my favorite characters in both tend to be the centaurs, centaur knights specifically, not the bone knights so much as the centaur knights, and then the mages. I love them to death. My favorite in the original game were Dao, or Tao, depending upon how you want to say her name, and then Ernest. And then in the third game, I absolutely loved Antares, and I can't even tell you why. I just really love that character. And I don't know, like there's a lot of really, really great mages in that game. So it would be kind of a toss up for me to figure out which one I like. I also like Poppets a lot. Poppets is a character who is a beastmaster. He's a little kid with a whip. and he can like summon creatures, and he is badass. So I like that character a lot as well. There's actually a lot of, like, there are so many characters in Shining Force 3 because it's three different Shining Forces split among three different games, like separate games that all have an entwined story. So that is a very, very long conversation if we're going to talk about that one.
Yeah.
However, like, I tend to like the Centaurs. I tend to like the Mages, especially, like, the characters, like, Arthur is an interesting character. Arthur is a Centaur knight who is also has some very, very limited magic, and he's like a weird character because there's no other one like him. And Arthur is a recurring character. Like every single Shining Force game has an Arthur who is a knight, a Centaur knight who is blonde, and he always is like a mage knight every time. And like the unfortunate part is that his magic is not very strong, and he only like gets a little bit of it. So like I don't even know what the deal is with that, but I know that the studio that created the Shining Force games, like the people who created Shining Force, love Arthur to death. Like that's their favorite character. So, you know, I think he's even in some of the other games that came before it as well, like Shining the Holy Ark. I don't quote me on that. I don't remember, but I kind of have it in my head that he showed up in some other games too. There's some crossover between other games with Shining in the title and this game, even if it's something like from the original Shining in the Darkness game, for example, the Kyantol race of deer looking people, they come over to the Shining Force games, but I don't know if there's that much else connective tissue between that one and the Shining Force games. So anyway, you can like friend me, you know, on Facebook and like message me and we can like talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
So how about you do that?
So I pulled up some like images of characters from Shining Force, and there is an incredibly badass looking like pigeon knight. What
is the bird knights? Yeah, the bird knights are awesome. Like they suck when you first get them, but they turn into some real badasses later. That especially like they're in the original game, there is a particular fight that you have to undergo where you have to cross a giant bridge, you know, like a chasm, and there's only like one bridge across. There's Pegasus knights on the opposing side coming to fight you, and they're really, really strong. And then there's also a laser eye. Yes, lasers. There's a laser eye that keeps on like wrecking shop on anything that's on the bridge when the countdown goes down after its cooldown cycle. So it can be a very difficult fight, especially if you don't clear out the Pegasus knights and then get your flyers across the bridge to start working on taking down that laser eye. But like that's like a very good reason to have the bird knights. They have a definite place, although they'd have also definite weaknesses, as you may imagine. So you know, I like all the characters and all of the classes in Shining Force to one degree or another, though, so like I can talk about that forever. can move on.
The centaurs are hard to understand when they talk because their voice is a little hoarse.
I'm not even going to say anything about that.
Okay.
There's a throbbing in my temple, Cole.
Sorry, it's been a while since I said something and my dumbness welled up. So
it could be worse. Could be the mules. They're all half-assed.
Oh, God. Please move on.
Okay. Oh, geez. We're only going to get through like two questions. let's see. Alexander says, you can step into the world of one game and have a debate with one character to try and change their mind. Who do you talk to and what do you try and convince them of?
I got an answer.
Okay.
I'll say Mass Effect 3 Morden, and I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Fuck. Now I'm sad. What is this episode?
Sorry. That's all right.
No, it's fine.
My question was nice and cheerful and all talking about happy things.
Yeah. This is a tough one because like the inclination is to say, oh, like, you know, you go to a villain and say, hey, your plan's actually not going to work out that well. Like, I'm trying to think of a hero who just might as well not bother. Like go into Chrono Cross and tell Surge to, you know,
Chill on the beach.
Yeah. Just kick it, because most, like a lot of JRPGs, most of the stuff that happens in that is actually his doing by accident, because he's being manipulated. Yeah, just any of these where some character is doing something dumb because somebody else in the story hasn't talked to them, or they're being manipulated by the bad guy. Just basically just reach through the screen and say, stop acting like a dumb character in fiction. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I can't think of a good example right now, but I think just in general, any scene where the hero has, you know, a gun pointed at the bad guy and, like, I don't know, decides to have a talk or something, it's like, no, just pull the damn trigger.
Yeah, no, at least shoot them in the leg, because that way they can't run away.
Gives you time to debate whatever you're thinking about.
Yeah, wing them. You don't have to hit center mass, you know?
And then you got a blood trail to go off of.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah, that. I know, maybe if I could just talk to, you know, Solid Snake after he leaves Afghanistan, be like, maybe just, you've done enough.
Yeah, no, dude, just chill, buddy. Yeah. Let's see. Did you have one, Jala, or do you want me to go on?
Yes, I have one. Did you just skip it over me for like no reason? Dude. Okay, so
I put it to you, just it was a hard question.
All right, so I've got a couple of answers. One is very, very easy, and it's for like the one person in the world that listens to the show and has played by Pottle. I would save Pottle's life. And then also,
wait, what?
A Pottle is a little kid archer in the game Vi, which is a game that was on the Sega CD and a few people played it. It's from Working Designs. I went back and I watched some of the cutscenes. Boy, is it some trash. But at the time, it was great. Anyway, and then the other thing, it's actually kind of funny because it got ameliorated in a later version of the game. The original Lunar game, when you leave from your continent to set off on your quest to become a dragon master, you leave your love Luna behind, because Luna is like, I've got to stay here and take care of, you know, your parents who also raised me, because, you know, I'm sort of like your sister, but also your girlfriend, because that's not weird at all. And anyway, like, she just leaves, and there's this whole tearful goodbye scene where she's like, you know, the world beyond these shores is so dangerous. You have to come back to me. All this other shit. It's like, oh, so sad. And I was like, I was crying my little eyes out. But when I played this game, when I was like a preteen or whatever I was, you know, and so like I would have changed that. But then in the later versions of the game, she goes with you. Yep. And then she still gets her ass kidnapped. But anyway, like she did. She went with us. And it was interesting and different and not like the original game. And so that was ameliorated, and then she still got kidnapped.
Yeah.
Because fate, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Because damseling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm only going to do one more because we've been going for 20 minutes. We should do another free play cleanup sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one is near to me. Spencer asks, what do you consider the most important traits of a good cat? For me, it's soft, doesn't mind belly rubs, and not an asshole. The Mike Eaton says, so a dog then? No, that is not the answer we're looking for. traits in a good cat.
Cole, you're the cat owner. You should start.
Well, we've only had cats. Okay, let me explain something about cats and Jala. Mm-hmm. We've only had cats a couple of times, mostly because my dad has always had a dog. We've also always had birds. And then we've also most of the time had fish. Right now we have all three of those. So, you know, and a lizard. So
right.
There's no way we're going to have a cat in the house. However, there was one point in time when we had a cat, and we had a cat when I was really, really little, and I don't remember it very well. And then we had a cat for several years, along with a couple of dogs and some birds, but the cat lived outside, not inside with, you know, the birds, so it was okay. But that cat, I don't know. Ninja was cool because he was super laid back. Like, he was a big, fluffy, fluffy, fluffy black cat that had bright green eyes, and he was so chill. Like, you could flip him upside down. He'd just be like, "What's up?" You know? Yeah. And like, you know, he would come to the driveway and wait for me because he heard my car down the street. And he would, you know, come and sit and wait for me. And then, like, when I was getting home from school, he would sit and wait at the bus stop and then walk me home. And, like, he, you know, he would walk my boyfriend out to his car and sit and wait. Like, he was like this little gentleman cat. He was like the best cat ever. And then one day he disappeared, and I don't know. I would like to think that he just up and moved, but I know that's not what happened. No. Anyway, you know, he was a great cat. So very chill. I like chill cats.
Yes. Agreed. Does anybody else want to answer before I just say something good about Greta?
All right. I'll say. Oh, good.
I think, you know, I follow the advice my father once gave me, which is a cat is just a dog with a personality disorder.
Yeah.
Depending on the cat, sometimes that is very true. Depending on the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think my traits in order of importance are wants to cuddle, doesn't have to cuddle, and doesn't shed.
That's good though. Those are good. Yours is actually really close to mine, which I was going to say,
Greta.
Yeah, Greta. But named, I mean, Greta. I got very pretty great cat named Greta. I think I got very lucky with her because she is both independent but also social, which me, you know, I mean, except for when she was in heat for that month and it was fucking hell. You know, wanted to cuddle but didn't have to, and you'd mostly just kind of follow me around the house but just kind of wanted to be in the same room. I think that goes a very long way. This kind of comes up and says hi throughout the day as she's doing her patrols. It's good. So yeah, sorry everybody, we didn't get to yours, but I will be squirreling them away and we will do a free play cleanup here soon. Yeah, thank you everybody for writing in with your questions, even if we didn't get to them. If you want to participate in these in the future, look at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for them to go up on the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jala, for putting this up.
Yahoo!
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, you've been away the longest, so I want to hear what you've been getting into.
You.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to try and remember them all. I have a good number under my belt, but we'll see if I can hit them all. So the first one, I think I played this back before I moved, was Goro Goa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. This is like an indie game. It's it's not a long game. It's a puzzle game. And I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's the premise of the game is there's basically four panels that you can, there'll be like pictures in each one and you can slide the pictures between panels. And the goal of the game is to like line up the pictures so that some interaction happens. So for example, if there's a picture of a street with a car on it, and then there's another picture of like a continuation of the street and you put it there, then the car might travel across the two pictures and then you do something else with the puzzle. So it's like a lot of that type of thing. It's a very unique game mechanic. But the game itself is only, I played it and beat it in an hour and 15 minutes. So it is a relatively short game. But it's a very, it's an interesting experience. I think it's really fun and really beautiful. I would say it's probably the sweet spot for it is it's like a really solid $5 game, maybe, for me, at least is how I value it. But, I haven't seen another game quite like that though. So I thought it was a very unique game. So I like that.
It's like a way artsier framed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. That's an excellent way to describe it.
Yeah. I played this on mobile. It's a really good fit on iPad, but I know it's on a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. I know it's on PC since that's where I played it. But yeah. Nice. Yeah. Anyway, I don't have too much to say to that. It's a pretty short game, so there's not too much to talk about without spoiling stuff, I guess. But there's not really much to spoil. It's just a pretty game. So, yeah. All right. The other game I've been playing, which I've started about a half a month to a month ago and have been playing all month is Baba Is You.
Oh, dang, yeah.
Have you guys heard of this game or talked about this game in the last month by any chance?
We haven't talked about it. I want to play it very badly.
Okay.
Yeah, so every time I open up Steam, I'm greatly disturbed by the grammar of its title.
So the premise of this game, it's pretty interesting. It's a Sokoban game, which means that you're basically on a tile grid and you can move stuff around as a character. So it's kind of like Pokemon, but that's the main mechanic is you move stuff around in this grid that you're in. Mm-hmm. And the premise of this game is that the rules of the game are laid out in text on the board. And you can move the rules around and you kind of reshape them so you can kind of change the rules of the game on the fly. So one pretty consistent rule that's on most levels is Baba Is You. And so there's a little character name that's apparently named Baba. and Baba Is You means that you control that character. However, there's going to be other words on the screen like rock and warm and float and like attributes and is's and has's and all that stuff. So you can move, like if I move the word rock over and change it so it then says rock is you, then I am now the rock and I can move that around. And that is my entity now. And I can, and so the point of the game is to solve puzzles. There's always like a win condition as well. So there's usually going to be something on the board that says something is win, like flag is win is a typical one. Mm-hmm. And what that means is if you, whoever you are by the rule set, are on a flag, then that means you win the game and it gives you a congratulations message and you go on to the next level. And that's malleable too in some levels where you can change what the win condition is. If you just have Baba Is You and you also make Baba Is Win, then you just win the game. You just win the game wherever you are.
So fucking clever. It sounds really, really good.
Yeah. And I thought the premise was really cool, so I had added this on my wish list a while ago, but it's really nice to see that a lot of the levels are really well designed as well. Where a lot of the levels, there's like a very clever trick that you have to figure out in order to beat it, and it's usually like really satisfying. That said, I'm stuck on like a lot of puzzles. There's probably, I would say like, I don't know, 8 to 10 puzzles that I'm just stuck on right now. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's basically different worlds that you can explore. And there's one really clever system where, so say if there's 9 puzzles in a world, the game developer will set it up on a 3x3 grid and you'll start in the bottom left. And after you solve that puzzle, it'll unlock the puzzle to your right and above you. Hmm. And the exit might be on the top right grid. And so it's basically giving you a lot of options of how you can get past the world. So if one puzzle just happens to not click for you and you can't get past it, there's ways around it. So I thought that was a really cool mechanic that I haven't seen in a lot of other puzzle games, especially like, what is it? Steven Sausage Roll, where mm-hmm. it's like, nope, you have to beat this puzzle if you want to continue. So I definitely appreciated that. And then it does a good job too of each world kind of introduces a new mechanic. So I think I mentioned a couple of them, like there's different attributes that the game will have. Maybe perhaps one small criticism is sometimes it doesn't fully explain how an attribute works, or it might take you a while before you figure it out. So that's maybe one kind of pain point. For example, one attribute is there will be there's a warm and there's a melt. So you can say like door is warm and like key is melt or something like that. And if you push the key into the door, it'll just kill the key and the key's like gone because it melts it, if that makes sense. There's like stuff like that that gets added in with each world. So that kind of like develops like what the types of puzzles are. And they do that with each world. And I think there's maybe like 8 or 9 different worlds or so. So I'm still not close to beating the game, but I'm just kind of, whenever I'm interested in playing it, I'll just go and pick a world that I haven't played in a while and see if I can figure out stuff with like the puzzle mechanic. And there's, as I said, there's like a lot of unexpected and like fun results of like how to solve the puzzle. There's a lot of puzzles where you can solve it in multiple ways, which is really nice. But the what's really cool too is like it's so open-ended in the program and the puzzle, the game like supports whatever decisions you make. So I actually crashed the game.
Did you make a loop?
Well, I made a rule set where keys produced keys.
Okay.
So and keys move. There's a move attribute, which means it'll just move in a direction and just ping pong back and forth, whatever direction it's going in. And so I had those two rules set up. And so every step that I took you know, like a line of keys would move and spawn new ones, and those would all move. And it was just like, so I got through like 5 or 6 steps at first, but then it would be like, I'd press the button and it would take like 5 seconds before it'd update and my character would move, and then all the keys would move or whatever. And then like, after a while, it was like, wait, 20 seconds or 30 seconds. And then eventually just crashed. But I was very happy to see that the game was actually trying to figure out all the updates that were going to happen from all these things that I had generated. So yeah, I mean, that was super cool that the game is like a platform for whatever you want to do with it. So probably requires a little bit of good design to make sure that that doesn't happen often. But yeah, no, that was really cool to see. Yeah, so I've really liked this game. It's kind of ongoing. I think I streamed it once or twice, so I might continue doing that again in the future. But yeah, anyway, any questions about Baba Azu?
So you're playing it on PC?
Yep.
Got
yep.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I'm curious. I've not spoken with anybody who has played the Switch version, which is I think the form that I would want to play this in.
Yeah, I could see that being very relaxing as well. I think so far I've put 20 hours into it, so I think that's pretty good for a puzzle game. So
nice.
Yeah. And then I think it's the last game that I've been playing since last time I've been on is I started playing the game Celeste last week.
Oh dang, Celeste is good.
Yeah, it's one that has been on my radar. I know, I think IGN gave it like a 10 out of 10 when it came out like a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd try it eventually. I guess it's a little bit different than I expected. It's mostly like a platformer. I thought of it earlier in the podcast that when we were talking about game difficulty, they use this as a good example of the game, how they handle difficulty, because you can change the game speed mm-hmm. and you can like... Oh. Oh. Kind of add different number of jumps that you want if that is like yeah if that's something you want to do. Mm-hmm. I thought that's like kind of a good way to handle difficulty in that game. Yeah, it's pretty twitchy. It's nice that a lot of times the way it works is it's a platformer, so it's similar to like Mario, but the controls are a lot more complicated, I guess, or there's a lot more complexity that's derived from the controls that they add. You can hang on walls and you can climb on walls, similar to was it Hollow Knight, but not exactly the same. The fact that you can climb up's different. Mm-hmm. And you can just wall jump if you want. But then on top of that, there's a double jump, but the double jump goes in whatever direction you're aiming the joystick, which adds a lot of complexity to it. Mm-hmm. And then what other mechanics are there? There's other mechanics that get introduced in the world where there's like things that you can interact with. Like for example, there's like orbs that will send you in a direction if you jump in them, and there's things that will refresh your double jump, and so and that's kind of where the other complexity comes from. And so the way the game works is it'll give you a scene that you kind of have to get through, and then once you get, and that's kind of saves your progress, and this is how they do checkpointing. Once you get through that scene, it'll carry over to the next scene where there's a next like set of platforming challenges, and then you can try and get through that. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of times they'll have very long scenes where the camera will just continuously pan over and you have to get through, you know, like a lot of challenges at once, which is always very frustrating, but also very rewarding once you finally get through it. So I've put only about 3.5 hours in this game. And I think I've done all but 2 of the chapters. So I've done like 5 of the 7 chapters or so, mm-hmm. something like that.
It's not a very long game if you don't do like the challenge stuff.
Yeah. So that's an interesting aspect too, is, like their version of collectibles in this game is they have strawberries. So it's kind of like the harder platforming challenges. You can try and get those. I've kind of gone half and half. Like some of them I've gone for, but a lot of them I've just been fine with saying like, I think I know how to do that, but I don't want to try that. So I'm just going to keep going. They also have like a cool thing in the game too, where you can turn on a speedrunning clock. So if you want to do a run through of the game, it's built into the game for you. So you don't have to do any, like have any software over on top of it. I thought that was really cool. And I think the world record's like something like 20 some minutes or 30 minutes or so. So it's like super low, but, yeah, and then on top of all this, there's a story with the game that I don't know how I feel about. It's fine, but it's like the tone of it's interesting because it's like two people who are younger and like a lot of talking about like technology they use, like Instagram and stuff like that, but then also mm-hmm. talking about like kind of like emotional problems they might be going through, like panic attacks and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting. It's mm-hmm. like it's something that, you know, it's like it's very night and day. You know, there's the puzzle platformer that you play, and then in between that, then there's like cutscenes where people talk to one another like that. And it's weird because they feel very different from one another, two different sections of the game. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of good places, though, where they integrate what's going on in the story with puzzle mechanics that I liked. Namely, there's like a crystal section, if that lands for anybody. But I like the game so far, but I don't see how it's like a 10 out of 10 game if people have rated it as that. So maybe I've gone in with too high of expectations, but I still have more game to play. So I'm going to withhold a final judgment until I finish the game.
I would agree. I don't know that it's a 10 out of 10. It's a very good game, though. I think that, you know, for many people, when they rate the game very highly, they are putting a lot of weight into the story and kind of the themes that it is addressing, namely, anxiety and kind of externalizing the idea of surmounting your inner problems onto the outer world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that for a bunch of people, it hit really hard on that angle for them, and it landed really well for them. Mm-hmm. That aspect didn't really work so much for me, but I also think it's an incredibly good platformer that mm-hmm. does a really good job of kind of, you know, sometimes like you'll be in the swing of things and you'll go in, but then you'll get to a screen and you'll say, oh, there's no way this is possible. But then it only takes a couple of tries to say like, oh yeah, they gave me all the tools I need to do this thing that looks impossible. And I feel great for doing it.
Yeah. And the music is really good, by the way. I know that said a lot about indie games, but there's some like upbeat parts that are like great. So
yeah, the Celeste soundtrack is always on in my house. Not always. I play it frequently over my speakers. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's on Spotify.
Okay, right on. So that's all the games I've been playing. I do have a new game that I will be playing probably in the next week or so, but I will wait and talk about that later. So.
Okie doke. Jala, I'm curious about the game that you put into the chat thing here. What's going on with Cthulhu Chronicles?
Well, before I talk about that, I have to talk about something I didn't get to talk about in the pre bantering section.
Okay.
So when I was away, the reason I wasn't on the last week was because I was trying to fix my office, which is where I record and work and train and live. I live in my office all mm-hmm. the time, and it's a separate building from the main house. Well, after Hurricane Harvey blew through, especially the ground shifted a lot, and so this little building that I live in it's basically up on cinder blocks, and when the ground shifted, because it's not on a slab, it screwed up the building. It started getting jank, and then the plumbing started to get messed up because it's leaning now in mm-hmm. a way it wasn't before. My dad was like, okay, we need some help to fix this. And you and I cannot level this building by ourselves because he can't lift anything. And cinder blocks are big and heavy. And for me to go from side to side to side of the building, trying to level one side with jacks and move cinder blocks, and then trying to level the other side and then moving back and forth would take a million years. It would take a very, very long time. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, let me see who I can talk to about that, you know, see if I can get anybody to help me out. So I know a lot of different people of various backgrounds, but I figured that my rucking group would be the best people to ask to do the thing, because ruckers pick up heavy things that are awkward and carry them for fun.
They do it voluntarily.
Ruckers like suffering. So, like, they also like, you know, they do the weight training and the whatever, and they're whatever. So, like, they're the best people to ask for this kind of a thing. So I just posted it to my ruck group, and a couple of my buds that I had known, Devo, who I met during my very first time ever putting a ruck on my back for my first event last year, and then a newer friend, Kenny, and then also new friend, Chris, who I'd never met before. But major shout out to him. He did not know me before and just showed up to help. Well, I found out that he has been a Duck Feed listener for the last year. And he listens to the level. And so he'd heard me for a long time. And then when he saw me posting in the Ruck Club, he's like,
oh, okay.
Wait a minute. Is this the same? It must be because she was talking about rucking on the podcast. Holy crap. I think I might sort of like run in the same circles or whatever. So I didn't know this when he showed up to my door. So, you know, like I give Devo a hug. He shows up and, you know, he's about to shake my hand. And I'm like, you get a hug too, because you just came over here to work on my building. So like, you get a hug and whatever. And yeah, then like when we were doing some cleanup, he's like, yeah, so I've been listening to Duck Feed for a while. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you may know him on Twitch. Listeners who happen to pay attention to your Hex Crank streams may know him as Harv Scooty McBoots.
Okay, yeah.
That was that guy with the very awesome Twitch name. He came and helped. So big shout out to him for coming and helping with that. But what we did was That's we leveled awesome. The building, so it saved my plumbing. It also saved my dad from, like, basically withering and dying because he was already having a hard time just trying to show us what to do. So, nice. You know, that. And then we also rebuilt my patio and my steps so I do not fall through them. Because once upon a time, the wood was so rotted that my leg went through and I fell. And it was wonderful. So there's photos of the building before and after if you want to see it out on my social media so you can see that. So that's the first thing I want to say. So awesome. Thank you for that, Chris. And Devo and Kenny, although they do not listen to podcast. So anyway, what I've been playing, I played Cthulhu Chronicles, all of it. So this is a mobile game that was free that was recommended by Gary on Unfilmable, which is the new network Lovecraft movie adaptation show. So I listened to the first episode of that, even though I don't think I've ever seen that movie. I might have. I don't know. I have vague recollections of things, but I don't know if it's because I read the book or if I watched the movie or where the impressions are coming from.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is a free text venture kind of game. The same company also released a Tunnels and Trolls app that I will also play at some point. Hmm. So that will be cool. But anyway, so in this game, it's basically a text venture because although it has the trappings of an RPG that you sit down and play, you've got stats and everything like intelligence stat, a health stat, and all this that affect, you know, that are affected by what's going on by your decisions during the game. And there are quote unquote roles where basically there's a circular thing that spins around. Like a roulette wheel, basically, that will stop and, like, tell you if you succeed or fail. And I have to say, like, I've been posting every single time on Twitter that I have failed. Because, like, the times that I have failed have been, like, the best. Because it's, like, when it looks like I should absolutely not fail. Like, let me show you what it looks like. Like... failing an intelligence check and there's like a sliver and motherfucker, it's a normal check, there is like a 1% chance that I'm gonna fail, and I fucking failed. Like,
for anybody who's listening, picture a roulette wheel, yes. But every single spot on the roulette wheel except for, I don't know, let's say that green infinity symbol or whatever it is success, and the green infinity symbol is failure. Jala landed on that one thing. Like, it is such a small sliver of the actual wheel.
Yeah. And it continues like, oh, and then you've got to see this one. This one's my absolute favorite because I was like right at the very, very edge of an athleticism check where it's like right on the in between part, and I'm like, I failed so many times, and it's like stupid. It's stupid funny every time it happened.
Wait a minute, so, did you edit the decals onto this, like, yes, you know, critical fail, okay, guess who rolled a one.
Yeah, guess who rolled a one. Like I rolled a one several times during my time with this game. So anyway, basically you make your decisions and everything, and you don't get to roll the dice. You get to push the button, and then it automatically does this, and it randomizes whether or not you do it or not. Apparently it randomizes to my detriment quite often.
Yeah.
But it's well written. It's fun. It's free for 3 attempts a day. And so what that means is, like, if you play the first chapter, there's 9 chapters total. So if you play the first chapter and you die, you can use all 3 of your plays trying to get through that first one if you want. And then if you want to keep, you know, going after it, and you don't have patience to wait until, you know, the next day when it refreshes and you get 3 more credits, mm-hmm. then you can actually purchase them through the app. But there's no reason why you can't just set it down and wait and come back to it the next day.
Right.
You know, like, usually for me, like, I don't want to sit and play a text venture kind of game for that long anyway. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, depending upon how well my current run is, and if I've rolled a 1, if they're doing, like, apparently an athleticism, sanity or intelligence check that I'm just screwed on, like, unless it's that situation, you know, like, I, like, today I played on 1 credit for like an hour and a half trying to finish up the game, and so I was like in one episode for a very, very long time, just working through and, you know, finishing it up. So I mean, like, you get some good playtime out of it for free. But the different characters that you can choose have different stats and different sort of backstories. I mean, the stories don't appear to be changed very drastically at all by what character you select. It's just basically, you know, like, some chapters, once you become familiar, like, if you failed it, you know, for example, and then you know what kind of checks are being performed, you can kind of guess which character would be better at that particular chapter, you know? Like, if there's a lot of athleticism checks, then you want to play, like, one of the more physically active ones, not the librarian, you know? So, yeah. And don't quote me. I do not remember who I was playing at the time of the sanity or the athleticism checks, but the intelligence check, I was actually playing the antiquarian, who is very intelligent, and I still failed. So, like, whatever. I picked the best character for that particular scenario with the strongest stat in that particular thing, and still fucked it up somehow. So anyway, but yeah, it's enjoyable. I played through the entire thing. It's basically the entire 9 chapters all tie together. They go in sequence, and they are one RPG, you know, like one, you know, session or one, you know, arc of a story that you would play in a sit down RPG. So, that's why, like, I enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to try out their Tunnels and Trolls version and see what that's like.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Chronicles. I intended to play this, and I'm positive that there is a tab of this open on my computer somewhere, and I just haven't gotten back to it.
Probably. Yeah. I wanted to jump on it because I was like, ooh, guess what?
Yeah, that sounds...
I know Cole's going to play this, and I know he's not going to get to it right now. So I'm going to get to it before he does. Yeah.
Just whooped.
Yep.
Nice. It also, I mean, it sounds like extremely your jam, but with, you know, you're liking sorcery and stuff.
Well, and then too, it is my jam. It's been a while since I played a text venture or a Visinov because mm-hmm. I've been in JRPG land, and right. then I don't know, I detoured into whatever I've been doing lately. Then I've just been really, really busy. So, like, playing a game on my phone has been nice, and it's like a laid back form, you know, which is nice because I've been doing a lot of stuff. So, yeah.
Nice.
It's cool. That's all I got.
Not bad. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been grinding on the Division pretty hard.
Okay.
Let's see here. I now am to the point, I'm level 28 out of 30. And I have one more conventional story mission to do, and then after that you basically start taking on the actual faction leaders, the enemy factions, and raiding their bases. So, you know, kind of the long and the short of it is I'm almost to the end game. So, and that puts me on just at about 70 or 80 hours.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
I know nothing about this game. So, like, how many different factions are there? And, like, are they interesting?
There's three factions, before the end game. There's basically, criminals that are taking advantage of the situation, militia members, and then, there's a group of people that were basically quarantined and now want revenge for being kind of locked up and left to fend for themselves.
Okay.
So let's see here. Since last time, I actually tried a little bit of the Dark Zone mode, which is basically a... player versus environment versus player mode they have. From a plot standpoint, they take place in areas where the virus or various other toxic chemicals are still present. So they're kind of a inhospitable no man's land. And
wait, so is this a zombie game?
This is not.
Okay.
The plot line is basically that some guy creates a weaponized strain of smallpox and releases it in New York, and that kind of destabilizes the world. And so, no zombies, just lots of evil people.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's a lot of fun. This mode kind of one of its big things is because there's no real oversight, you can decide to go rogue and play the bad guy and try to take out other players. And as you're fighting, you'll find items that have been contaminated with the virus. So in order to actually get those items, you have to call in a helicopter and survive long enough for it to arrive and airlift the items out. And when you do that, not only do waves of NPCs come after you, but all players on the map are notified of your location. So anyone that's going for more of a PvP route can come after you.
Mm-hmm.
I personally haven't actually had that happen to any significant degree, but still kind of makes things more exciting. So
Didn't they have that mechanic in the first division as well? Like whenever you like finish like a mission, you had to like wait for a helicopter?
So they didn't have that in the actual missions. They did have the Dark Zones in the original game.
Okay.
So yeah, this is something they've definitely had before.
Okay. So they've like iterated on it for this game.
Right. Exactly. So other than that, I'm not sure there's a ton to say. I'm still enjoying the gameplay a lot. I really have liked, I've kind of found I think my favorite setup is to use a light machine gun, paired with a double barrel shotgun.
Okay.
So that's, close range. The double barrel shotgun is, usually the highest damage output, weapon in the game, so that's really good when you are suddenly faced with like a suicide bomber or someone trying to close on you. Whereas the machine guns, in addition to having a lot of ammo, they naturally are better at suppressive fire, so you can force enemies to go into cover for a couple of seconds so that you can move to a new location. So, yeah, and then I recently found actually a sawed-off shotgun that I can use in my pistol slot, so I've been kind of messing around with that. So, not sure a whole lot to say. This is kind of the general, you know, just kind of game that gives you a lot to, you know, grind on and shoot at things, so.
I mean, for 60 or 70 hours, like you said, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you see yourself, is this the kind of game where, like, you would, you know, re-roll or start a new character and roll with a different faction, or do you feel like you're kind of done with this once you hit the cap?
So there's not really different factions. Once you hit the cap, you actually get the ability to actually have a class. You basically have the option between playing a sniper, a demolition person, or kind of an all-around survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm hoping is, you know, they definitely are, you know, angling towards it being kind of a Destiny sort of thing where they're, you know, regularly releasing both expansions and updates. So they actually just released their first content date last week, which releases the final, like, faction base for the endgame faction, and then also releases some new unlockables that are cosmetic items that you can have a month to unlock. So a little bit like the battle pass type of idea, although no explicit battle pass, but
right.
So yeah, so I'm hoping that keeps it fresh. Yeah, here's hoping.
Cool. You played anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Cool. I don't have very much. So I streamed, I did a weird thing this past weekend with my streams. Instead of starting a new game, I did horror levels and non-horror games. So on Friday, I did the Shellbridge Cradle level of Thief Deadly Shadows. And then on Saturday, I did the Ocean House Hotel in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. And you can hear
sort of, I remember that, yeah. Creeping the hell out of me.
What were you going to say, Jala?
Well, as best you could, you had to cut that one short.
Kind of. So I got through the hotel just fine. Yeah. It was like turning in the mission that didn't work out.
Yeah.
So it ended up being a short episode, mostly because I forgot how short the Ocean House Hotel was. but yeah, those are both good games. It is really hard, specifically with Thief, getting back into that game, because I constantly forget that Shellbridge Cradle, for as good of a level as it is the next to last mission. And so it is incredibly demanding. And it's been, you know, a little bit under 4 years since I played that game. So that was interesting.
Now, I thought, didn't they though go with the thing where if you really want to, you can just kill your ways through the levels, or is that not the case?
Specifically in Shellbridge Cradle, so the enemies there are undead, so they're incredibly tough. If you don't have the right kind of weapons, which of course I didn't because I forgot about the mechanics of the game. And then the second part of the mission, you're actually in the past, like you've broadcast yourself back to the memory of the building. It's a super weird level. And the guards are replaced by these shades. And if the shades touch you, then it's basically instant death. So that's a bummer.
Yeah, that, you know, instant death does tend to ruin your day. So I'm told.
Yeah. So.
Wait, who told you this?
one of the shades.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was fun, and that was interesting, and I was happy to be able to show these levels to people who otherwise would not have been able to take a throw at them.
Are you gonna continue on and do more levels like that?
No, I think I'm gonna start up a new game after this next weekend. I'm not gonna be streaming this weekend because of Milwaukee. But yeah. It was neat. However, like finding saves and then also patching these two games from 2004 to work on a 2018 system and also stream them. It was a little bit more than I realized I was biting off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
So, additionally, I've continued playing Satisfactory.
Ooh,
yeah.
I didn't hear about this. Okay.
Yeah, I talked about Satisfactory last week. Satisfactory is incredibly good.
Yeah, I've seen some of it on Twitch. Yeah.
It's yeah. So I'm to the point where I've kind of hit the limit of what's currently available in early access, but my factory is a raggedy ash dishcloth and I need to straighten it out and get my shit together and actually start, you know, streamlining it. And I've not really explored any of the map really. So
are you saying that your factory is not satisfactory?
Yes, I am saying that. So, I've been having fun, kind of in between Sekiro attempts, going in and just kind of, tending to my garden. And by garden, I mean, bit of metastasizing industrialization on this natural world that is spreading across the horizon like a gray blanket. Yeah.
So I guess it's in early access. Does the version of it have like an end game or something you're shooting for, or is it just like a sandbox right now?
There is a progression. Basically there's a tier system. So one of your early goals is to get enough materials to build a space elevator, because ostensibly you've been sent here to harness a bunch of resources to send back up to your corporation. Every time you send up, every time you meet one of the goals, like the resource goals, it unlocks a new tier, and those new tiers come with new research goals. So you get new buildings that you can build, new resources you can search for, et cetera. Currently, I think there are 8 tiers in the game, but only 6 are available in early access.
Okay.
But they have not said like where this is going to top out. And to like tell you like how like where this is getting to, it's like I'm unlocking the ability to create resource splitters, like conveyor belt splitters that I can program to tell like, okay, you know, this will take an input of X number of things and it will sort and send this material this way and this material this way and everything else this way.
Okay.
Which basically means you can refactor your entire factory to be more efficient and more space, more compact, and also again build it upward.
That's going to be the sequel name, is Refactory.
Yeah, it's really good. I've had a lot of fun exploring the map as well. There's something really cool where, you know, you like the company that has sent you has also sent other people, and they've been very they've been not very successful. Like they didn't so much land as crash land. So one of the ways that you can increase your efficiency, you go and explore and you find these wrecked ships, and they're locked, so you have to get power to them, but you also have to bring enough materials to repair it so you can open the door. Inside of these are hard drives with alternate recipes for certain resources. So like they're not necessarily more cost efficient, but like wire is incredibly wire you manufacture very quickly and you're going to max it out. So copper ore ends up not being very useful. You can take that copper ore and say, all right, I can pick an alternate recipe for something like steel, which makes no sense, but I'm just throwing that out as an example, and say, all right, the surplus of copper can make up for a deficit in some other resource that is harder to, that is either harder to get or is more useful elsewhere.
It looks like a sweet game. I'm holding off until it's like released in earnest, I think. No, but
I have no idea what their timeline is. The developer is really active on social media. And yeah, like, I don't know, I usually am in the same boat as you, Ben, but for me, it's been neat, like following the patch up, the patch notes and stuff.
Yeah.
So
no, I have a similar feeling with the Subnautica expansion that they have out right now too, where it's like, oh, I really want to play this, but I'm going to try and resist.
but I love the original, but you want to wait. Yeah. That's the whole thing. yeah, Satisfactory is a really good game, guys.
Wee.
And that's everything that I have.
Yay. Cool. You know what I feel?
You feel buttons?
I feel buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Level 281. Thank you, Ben, for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And thank you for laughing. I'm so happy to have pleased you.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're in the upper Midwest, we are going to be in Milwaukee. By we, I mean me. I'm sorry that I excluded you with my language. No, I'm going to be in Milwaukee along with Gary. We're doing a live show at the Midwest Gaming Classic on Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Saturday night at 8:30 at the 1983 Bar and Arcade, we're doing a meetup. So we're going to be spreading the word on social media. It will be a good time. And I just looked at the weather. It does not appear that there is going to be a blizzard this year as there was last year. So otherwise, you know what you can do for this show: ratings, reviews. People have been killing it on the Patreon recently. So happy for that. But most of all, please come back next week. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
No. Greta.
But I got something. Maybe I might, because I couldn't stream the last couple of Sundays, I might possibly be streaming on Friday night.
Okay.
During your normal Hex Crank time.
Yeah.
Counter stream.
Because he's not going to be streaming.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So it's going to be free. Like, I'm usually hanging out with him in his stream.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, I might be doing that. So like, the day that this comes out, possibly I may be streaming that evening because I'm busy as hell the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
So there.
No,
that's the goal.
You don't need my permission or blessing, but I will extend it graciously. Anyway.
Well, thank you, Father.
Father Ross.
Oh.
Let us move on.
Yes. So I'm Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm David Meyersmith. You cannot find me because I am a ninja.
I'm Jellichon in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Who's got titles?
I got a few.
Okay.
All right. We play duet. And then instant death ruins your day.
Okay.
And refactory.
So I also had refactory.
Okay.
And I had Rockers Like to Suffer.
That's a bumper sticker.
That's pretty great.
All right. Ben?
I had Vegan Sniping. I had The Artistic Whatever. And I just added in Father Ross.
And then I realized I hadn't written any down, so I just wrote one that I said, A Great Carpet to the Horizon. I think Refactory wins it by votes. How do you all feel about that?
I don't know that it was the funniest title, though.
Yeah, I like Vegan Sniping. Vegan Sniping made me laugh.
I can get behind Vegan Sniping.
The problem is that we all... You know, there is a vegan sniper, Damian Mander, who helps fight poaching in Africa.
Huh.
And empowering local women and makes them rangers.
Nice.
There, factoid of the day. Anyway, I don't know. Everybody laughed at a different thing, though. But yeah. Okay, whatever. It's fine. I don't care. I have no emotional investment in this.
What was the one that you wanted to advance as?
I said I have no emotional investment in this. The titles for today. It's fine.
Okay.
As long as it's not Refactory, because as much as I wrote it down at the same time, it's not my favorite title.
Okay.
So
what is your favorite title?
I don't have one, but it's not that. Whatever it is, it's
not that. tell you what, I'm just going to make it Oubliette Duet.
Oh, he just... just came out of left field with that. Oh no.
We laughed at that. I'm King Solomoning this. So
you're gonna cut it in half?
Well, no.
Yes,
like I made a snap decision, kind of just to make the decision, but also to see if somebody stepped out and used that to make their case for the one they really wanted. So it's gonna be a Bliette duet.
Okay. I don't care as long as it's not refactory.
Cool. All right. Well, everybody have a good week.
Yeah. You too. Enjoy Milwaukee.
I will try.
Say hi to everybody.
I will.
I would say give everybody hugs, but I that's not going to happen. Yeah. That would be me. I would be giving everybody hugs, and then I would come home with con cooties.
Yep.
I'm waving at my microphone right now. And yeah. So yeah.
That's it was goodbye. So good to have you back, Ben.
Yeah.